So does anybody want to review what we discussed? What was Arjuna's confusion? Beginning of third chapter. What is he confused about?
He's confused that he should do the jnana and karma, which is better, doing karma or not doing karma.
He was confused because between karma yoga and buddhi yoga.
Okay. So what was the
confusion?
What was the specific confusion?
Should he fight or should he give up? Buddhi yoga is
literally it means knowledge. So he's thinking use his knowledge and fight in the battlefield. But how can it is possible using?
Okay, got it.
While fighting, how to remembering the Krishna?
Both, I think he says both are contradicting each other, right?
Yeah.
One he says not to do and the other one is like not to do. But
okay, probably you want to say something? Everybody forgot third chapter. Yeah. Swami Prabhu?
Yes, Mataji. So when Krishna talked about Buddhi Yoga in verse 249, Arjuna interpreted it as just, you know, sitting there in a forest and, you know, just being there like a rock and meditating on the Lord. And anything, as God says, is abominable activity, he also took into threat the war itself. So that was his confusion, and he saw ambivalence in what God said. You want me to fight or you don't want me to fight? So he's asking God to clarify. And so apparently, what it is going to be, you said, was that this chapter he is going to clarify how to work in Krishna consciousness.
Mm. Yeah. So until the middle of the second chapter, Krishna was talking about he was triggering Arjuna to fight. So always the conclusion was fight, right? Mm. But then at 2.49, he started discussion about Buddhi Yoga. So all the terms in every verse, there is a concept of Buddhi Yoga. So Buddhi Yoga literally could be considered as Jnana Yoga, or, you know, focusing on intelligence of Krishna. That means, but Arjuna thought in that way there cannot be any action. By focusing on intelligence on Krishna, there cannot be any action. So the first half Krishna is saying fight, and the rest of the half Krishna is saying do Buddhi Yoga. That means focus intelligence on Krishna. So that means it's not fighting. So how can I fight and not fight? So then Arjuna is thinking it's a contradiction. So what should I do? Should I fight or not fight? So in the beginning of third chapter, Arjuna is asking, if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work, then why are you asking me to fight? So if Buddhi Yoga is better than karma, plain karma, then why are you asking me to fight, which is going to, it's ghastly, because it's going to get me reactions. So that's why he's saying again, text number 2, that my intelligence is bewildered because of your equivocal instructions. You know, it's the contradictory instructions. So please tell me decisively what is beneficial to me. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada clearly mentions that he's asking it for us, clearing the path for us, right? For us to understand for the future, for all of us, exactly to know what Krishna wants, you know, what is the message, you know, what is the emphasis Krishna wants to give. But actual meaning of Buddhi Yoga means what?
To work in
Yeah. It's Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. It's all same. So, but Arjuna understood Buddhi Yoga to be Jnana Yoga. Or Sankhya Yoga. Analytical study. So, that means just research. There is no action. So, okay. So there was a discussion among all the Bhakti Gita groups about trying to cover section by section instead of like and going at a faster pace. Trying to cover sections rather than, you know, verses.
Okay.
Trying to oversee all the groups. We are seeing that, you know, every group is going at their own pace and some people are taking years for one chapter. So at least there was a consensus that, you know, we should do sections, section by section, based on what is sections are outlined in Surrender Unto Me, right? The book which we discussed. So we'll try to do that. So that what that means is that we will highlight only points of the purport. Like we read some points of the purport and like share, discuss among the ourselves. So homework for you is before the class you should probably read, you know, these purports, or you know, after the class read at least. So that you can come with questions only. I didn't understand this phrase, what it means, or you know, we can discuss more further on that. So if you want the sections, that book is a surrender unto me. Maybe somebody can take an assignment. Who has that book? Anybody has book at home?
I have.
Yeah, but who can take do this assignment? So what you have to do is before the chapter begins, you can anyway we share the sections for third chapter, right? Yeah, I think that's what we are going to cover for third chapter. Those are sections. But in the beginning of the chapter, if we don't cover that.
So in that does he give sections?
Yeah, he gives sections at the end of the book. So there we can just write the sections like, you know, this verse to this verse, this one. So that way people, like all of you can read those sections completely and come. Oh, some sections are very large, we may not cover in one class. But at least, you know, we know, like for example, now we hope to cover like, you know, until 9th verse.
So 3 to 9 is one of the sections. So
yes, 3 to 9 is Karma Yoga.
So we are covering one theme or
theme,
section.
Yeah, okay. Subsection, session. Section.
We will go a little faster.
Faster, yes. Indirectly. Yeah.
And also we are also reading homework.
In one class.
Why?
Oh, in one class you cover a section?
Yeah, that's the reason we are faster.
Okay, what we'll do is, actually different groups are different in different, like, you know, different set of people, right? Some groups have people who have been in Krishna consciousness for a while. So for them, you know, they know everything kind of thing.
Right.
But if, depending on the group, we can make a decision, you know, subjectively. So we'll start with that, you know, try to apply at least, you know, we'll do our part. You all can, you know, give feedback, you know, tell which one you like better. I like the one which we were doing. But at the same time, I want to, you know, incorporate what they requested me to do or us to do. So we'll try to do that way and see how it goes. If it feels like, you know, we are not going in depth or, you know, something like that, we can always, you know, change or, you know, go at it. And definitely we are open for questions at the same time. It's not that, you know, oh, we have to cover this means, you know, we can't ask questions or, you know, we can't discuss. Okay.
So
you
mean, like 3 to 9, we should read all the shloka before coming here?
Yeah, purports. It's like translation and purports. Because we will cover some sections of the purports. We will not read a full purports.
Oh, okay. Here.
Here, in the class. At least, you know, that we'll start with that. And we'll see what you, know, what how you feel the new style. And if you like the other one, we'll go back.
So we will not read just to save the time. That's the only reason.
Yeah. Because not only reading, right, we are talking about every point in the purport, right? So usually we take 1-2 verses in the class. But if you have to go so many verses.
So I was thinking somewhere in the middle, like 3 to 9 means 7 verses in a class, which might be a bit too much. How about 4?
So that's why, depending on the section, if it's too big, so it's not about we have to complete the section, that's what I'm saying. That's, we try to apply it, we'll see how much we can apply based on the audience we have.
Oh, sorry.
So even though we are saying we're covering this section, and however many verses there are, we still read verse by verse and say that today we read so many verses to in order to cover all of one section.
Yeah.
Right? Just go fast, but we still read the verse.
Yes. What happened? Everybody's singing. Nobody liked the new style. Everybody's singing.
Last week you were not here, so we did our class here. So you're changing again?
I don't know. Last week they had exam.
Last week we had exam, so we.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we had class here every time.
You room kept it, right? You room under the kitchen. Carry on there.
You roj me rakatis kunte ra?
Ante orne kuch toh confused hota hai.
Oh. So should we go down in that room? We just now about to start.
But we don't. We never have class.
We all. Oh, that's like 1 year back class, Prabhu. If you don't mind, you can continue there. Start from today and continue in the class.
Okay.
Sorry, Prabhu.
No, basically, we have been doing DOS here for a long time.
Long time?
You were doing in that corner.
Yeah, we were doing
room.
In that.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. You were doing
we
in that room.
Oh.
And then when the book table moved.
Yeah.
First we were doing down, then we came upstairs, then we were doing here.
I remember
so
all
the classes.
It's okay. Okay, whatever it is. That's okay.
5 weeks ago we were
I
doing this
two,
class.
I think two times we have been here, otherwise we used to.
Yeah, you're always yeah,
okay,
here.
Whatever. Some we can
then
do whichever
room.
Yeah, you can do for today.
Next time we will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, this all recorded. Okay. Okay, so we'll start. So we started talking about Krishna's reply to Arjuna's confusion, right? That's starting from verse number 3. Right, so Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, others by devotional service. So Krishna is again talking about the two classes he mentioned already, which is like, you know, Sankhya Yoga and Buddhi Yoga. Right?
3 to 9.
Yeah. So now in verse number from 4 onwards, Krishna is going to talk, 4 to 9, he's going to talk about Karma Yoga. Right, so Arjuna, okay, let's understand Arjuna's psychology. So Arjuna's psychology is that if I do work, I'm going to get reactions. So if I have reactions, then I have to face the reactions in this life. And if suppose I die without completing my reactions, I have to be born again to face the reactions. So in order to avoid the cycle of birth and death, I should stop acting in the first place. So then I'll not get reactions. So let me not act anything. Right? So that's the argument somebody can give, or Arjuna is also giving. So in that case, so the argument is where every action I'm going to get a reaction. So if I don't reap the reactions in this life, I may have to take birth again to reap the reactions. So just for reactions, I have to be born again. So I want to avoid the cycle of birth and death. So I want to stop acting in the first place, so I don't get reactions. So there are some set of philosophers who want to go that path where, you know, I'll just not act, or they think that they're not acting, but actually they're acting. So how they are acting and, you know, why that is not a proper path to pursue is what Krishna is going to answer now. Starting from text number 4, where Krishna is emphasizing how work is very important for everyone. And why, you know, there are certain characteristics based on the way we are that we need to do work. By design. Text number Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. So here what Krishna is saying is, by abstaining from work, one cannot achieve freedom from reaction. So that argument, right, you know, I'll stop acting, then I'll not get any reaction. Krishna is condemning that argument. He's saying it's not possible. Just by abstaining from work, you'll not get freedom from reaction. And at the same time, by doing that, you'll also not even get perfection. It's not that, you know, by doing that, you'll go forward in the path of self-realization. That's also not possible. So you'll not get, there are two points here. First is, he's saying you'll not get freedom from reaction. Second point he's saying is, you'll also not attain perfection. By what? By not doing work. By abstaining from work.
Why first part, ma'am? I'm sorry, Mataji.
Why the
first part, if you don't work, there won't be reactions, right? I know you will not progress second part, that I agree. But what about first?
Because then you're also not performing your duty if
right.
You don't
know. Yeah. It was the verse, right? In action, it is sinful, right? So that's the topmost sin we are doing.
Yeah. Where Krishna karma ne vedika riste, where Krishna emphasizes the work, right?
In action itself is sinful.
Yeah. Which can, that verse is there? Yeah, 3. Yeah, second chapter. Maapaleshu kadachina. 42? It's 2.47. We'll just read the translation.
You have a right to perform your...
So where Krishna is telling that you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. So basically, we have right to do a duty, and we should not be attached to not doing the duty. So that becomes, you know, inaction, so-called inaction, and that's also actually not good. By not doing a duty, we'll get reactions.
Yeah, it's not good, but will it create, you know,
reactions? Yes. That's why Krishna's argument to Arjuna is, Arjuna was saying, if I fight the war, I get reaction. But Krishna is saying, if you don't fight the war, because of not doing your duty, you'll get reactions. So there is certain duty for all of us. So we should do that duty. Just by not acting, it's not going to work. Because by not acting also, we are going to act. That's what next verse Krishna is going to tell. How we are going to act.
Yeah, I was thinking in terms of, you know, science, like without action, we are only
reaction,
right? If you don't do actions, our past reactions are still there, right? We have to bear them again, if not down the snake also, right?
Yeah, we have to bear them, that's one thing. But the idea is to stop further reactions by not acting. But Krishna is saying that's also not possible.
I think the underlying meaning is whatever actions you do now, you do in a selfless way, the akarma, because then it's going to not create new reactions for you, right? So even though you're acting out, you're not adding up to the reaction.
So the solution is ki is akarma, but not acting.
God removes the wall that bounces back.
Okay, so we'll read like first 2-3 lines and then we'll jump to the last part of the purport. Can Mataji can probably...
The renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified by the discharge of the prescribed form of duties which are laid down just to purify the hearts of materialistic men.
Okay, so essentially what Srila Prabhupada is telling here is everybody has a prescribed duties. We'll come talk a little bit about, you know, what is a prescribed duty and all in a minute. So that prescribed duties are meant to purify the hearts. Based on the nature, guna and karma, we have certain prescribed duty. Based on the varnashrama, we are situated in varnashrama, this thing, we have certain duties. And that duties, if we do, that will purify the heart. Then, eventually, we can renounce work. That's what, then it becomes sannyasa or renounced order of life. Unless there is purification, if you renounce, as somebody was telling last time, right? Then, Prabhupada was sharing. Unless we are purified, if we renounce work, then it's going to agitate our mind, also it's going to cause social disturbance. Like for example, somebody namesake, we take sannyas, right? Last words we covered, right? Namesake, we take sannyas. What will happen is we live by, you know, getting things from others or for prestige. But internally hankering for prestige, adoration. But actually it's not really renounced, because internally we are hankering for all those things. Because the heart is not pure. So unless heart is pure, we should continue our prescribed duties. So what are prescribed duties? So that...
But how do you know that you have come to that point that you can take renunciation or your heart is purified enough, right?
So, one is first of all, we cannot do, you know, we always, these things to be done under guidance, right? So sometimes, you know, our mind may say, you know, I'm advanced enough, you know, that Prabhu always keeps telling, I'm advanced enough, I'll go to bar or, you know, I preach or something, right? No, like that. So first of all, we need guidance. The other thing is, we'll know, as I was sharing with Amit Prabhu, we will know in a day or two whether we are, you know, advanced enough or no, because our mind will get agitated otherwise. We make up a decision, let's say, you know, I want to quit my job, or, you know, I want to join temple or something, you know, some kind of so-called renunciation. After 1-2 days, we'll immediately start thinking, you know, oh, what about my, you know, work, you know, what about future, after 10 years, who will give me money, you know, what about my retirement? No, all these things, right? Immediately, that means, you know, we are not ready.
The mind, the agitation shouldn't be there completely, no question at all. So then it means...
Then we are ready, actually. Otherwise, you'll know, we'll not be stable. Then we'll come back and forth.
I think
think in one of the Prabhupada lecture I heard, like maybe in different context, he's I don't remember the question, but I remember the answer. Like when you eat the food, you know when
yes,
your tummy
yeah,
is full.
That's what
so,
we're saying. Pareshanubhuti, the term. It's in one of the purports. Always we say, right? Like this is also a way we can measure our advancement. Like
yes.
You know, how we know we are getting advanced is like we know ourselves. We can making progress because when we eat the food, we know we are full. Nobody else need to tell us.
This talk, yeah.
Yeah. So the key is unless we are purified, we should not give up our duties. So what are our duties? That's a question again. So I was remembering this purport. In second chapter we discussed where Prabhupada was outlining this duty, so we'll just touch upon that. 2.40. I don't think we are going to cover section today. Yeah, but that's
better.
Good.
At least we'll read purport.
Yeah.
Completely. Otherwise we will not read. I will skip.
So 2.40. Oh, is it this one? I wrote
down. No, all the duties are
yeah. No, sorry, actually 2.31. So if you look at 2.31 last paragraph, so Prabhupada is talking about Swadharma.
Mm.
Right? There are two kinds of Swadharmas.
Okay.
So you can make a note of this purport in the 3.4 purport so that you know when you read you can connect back. 2.31 purport. Where Prabhupada is defining what are prescribed duties. So we'll just read that last paragraph. Or actually I'll just summarize. You know, Prabhupada is talking about two types of Swadharma. One is Swadharma in a material platform, like based on our nature of the body, guna and karma. So that is Varnashrama Dharma, based on, you know, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, there are certain type of duties. And also based on Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Brahmachari, Sannyasi, right? One Varna and Ashram. There is certain duties. That is based on basically material duties, Swadharma. And when one is liberated, there are spiritual duties. And also for us, while in the path of liberation also, we have spiritual duties like chanting, all those things, right? So one has to somehow balance both of them. We have to do our, you know, so-called job and things like that. At the same time, do our sadhana. Otherwise, we can't suddenly jump here and say, you know, I'm liberated, I'll do only spiritual activities, I'll not do material activities. So this, if you can, you know, later read this last section of the purport, this last paragraph, you know, to understand more in detail of what is Swadharma and what are prescribed duties. Right? So now we'll read the last few lines of the purport. Without purification of heart, this is like sixth line from the bottom. Prabhupada.
Sixth line.
Without purification of heart.
Okay. Without purification of heart, sannyasa is simply a disturbance to the social order. On the other hand, if someone takes to the transcendental service of the Lord, even without discharging his prescribed duties, whatever he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord. That's Buddhi Yoga. Sva alpam api asya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. Even a slight performance of such a principle enables one to overcome great difficulties.
Mm. So one point, another point Prabhupada is telling is that, you know, without purification, if we take the sannyasa, then we cause social disturbance. Because, you know, we'll try to, you know, satisfy our gratifications by exploiting others. So many people, right, we call so-called swamis, right, so many people, we, all these things come out. You know, TV, you know, they, scandals, all those things, right? Why? Because they artificially took a sannyas order, you know, yellow dress, you know, they get all the money. But then internally, they are not pure enough. So they do all this, you know, they try to get their things gratified secretly. Then unnecessarily, you know, people lose trust. That's why, you know, nobody wants to follow any spiritual path for that reason. Right? People think, you know, it's all, you know, just for money, they do something just to grab money. Then why will, you know, there is no bona fide path. That's what people think. But otherwise, what Prabhupada is telling is, rather, you know our situation, that, you know, we are not pure enough. Wherever we are, stay there and take up devotion service. Because the devotion service itself will purify us. While trying to do our duties, don't give up your duties. Do our duties and at the same time do devotion service. The devotion service and the duties together will purify our heart.
But it says that if someone takes to the transcendental service of the Lord, even without discharging his prescribed duties, he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord. So
yeah, I was thinking somebody will ask this question. So this is not an excuse for not doing our duties, but this is like, from what I understand, Prabhupada is giving an example of, you know, sometimes for a higher cause, somebody has to give up certain duties. Like for example, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was a grihastha. He was married to Vishnupriya, and then he has a mother, he is only son. So according to Varnashrama Dharma, he is supposed to, you know, take care of mother and wife and, you know, have children and everything. But he gave up the duties and took sannyas. Because the sannyasa was needed at that time for a furtherance of devotional service for the Lord. So for that reason, if you have to, and of course it's under the guidance, if you have to give up that prescribed duties, then it's okay. But it's not like, oh, now we'll take this. Okay, now
for
I'm
for everyone.
Yes,
for a very few people.
It's under guidance, and also under when we are qualified.
So, do such people get reactions out of, you know, abstaining from performing those duties? Like he had a duty towards his mom and
No, because they are taking up the higher duty of doing this. Because devotional service of the Lord is transcendental to all the material duties. So once we serve the devotional service of the Lord, and when we are qualified and under the guidance, then we will not be, you know, bound by the reactions by the lower duties. Yeah, that's what actually we will... So that's the verse we covered, right? This is the verse 2.40. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayato mahato bayad. Where 2.40, we'll just read the translation. You can write down that verse number also there if you want, so that you can connect this. So 2.40 translation, Krishna is saying in this endeavor, that means in the endeavor of devotional service, there is no loss or diminution. You want a pen? Somebody wants a pen? A pencil? So in this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. And a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So there is no loss, first of all, and also little progress can protect us from fear. Fear of death. Yeah, the elaboration of that point of, you know, giving up the prescribed duties, that's going to come in the next purport. Garima Mataji, feel it. Yeah. So the next point Krishna is telling in the next verse, why one cannot abstain from work is going to be talked next. So we'll read the next verse, text number 5. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. Got it? So based on the modes of nature one acquires, one is forced to act helplessly. So even if we say I'm not working, that means I'm going to sleep. That means I'm acted by mode of ignorance. So I'm doing something. By not doing something, I'm doing something. So that's what Krishna is saying. Nobody can not act even for a moment. See, he's emphasizing kshanam api. Not even for a moment can we not act, because by nature soul is very active. Not only is the characteristic of embodied being, it's actually by the nature of the soul that it's active. That's why impersonalists, when they go to Brahma Jyoti, they cannot stay there, right? Because there is no activity, they have to come down. So we Brahmajyoti is effulgence from the body of the Lord. That's actually the goal, or you know, the goal of impersonal liberation. It's also a spiritual destination, but they just remain a spark in the Brahman. Brahmajyoti is like, you know, light, you can say light. They remain as a spark in that. Soul remains as a spark without activity. So then, you know, they cannot stay there forever. Then they have to come down to do some activity, because soul by nature is active.
One of the questions in the text.
Yeah, yeah, that. That's correct. Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan.
No, can I ask
a
question?
Yeah, sure. Oh, that so question in the test.
I haven't taken the test.
I should ask.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
I'll ask you after.
Okay. So we'll read the purport. Mataji?
It is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body cannot move.
Yeah, we can jump two lines and we can read as such.
As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations that dictated by the illusory energy. In contact with material energy, the spirit soul acquires material modes. And to purify the soul from such affinities, it is necessary to engage in the prescribed duties enjoined in the shastras. But if the soul is engaged in his natural function of Krishna consciousness, whatever he is able to do is good for him.
Okay, we can pause there. So first part of the purport, Prabhupada is telling that by nature, because soul is always active, it has to act. So, you know, even in embodied life, one has to act. Now the question is, what are we going to act for? So either we can act for Maya or illusory energy, or we can act for Krishna. This is the choice, this is the only choice. There is no choice of not acting. We will always act. The question is whether we act for Krishna or we act for illusory energy. And Prabhupada is defining, because the soul is embodied, it's bound by the modes. To purify the effect of the modes, one has to do prescribed duties. But other path is, that's a gradual path. Other path is actually, if one takes devotion service of the Lord, then automatically he gets purified also. So that's what Prabhupada is telling. But if the soul is engaged in its natural function, you know, that's the constitutional position of the soul, of Krishna consciousness, whatever he is able to do is good for him. So then under the guidance, one can even give up prescribed duty sometimes. As we were discussing in that example, right? Somebody wanted to quit work, you know, because he didn't find any reason. But then somebody, he was advised or instructed that, you know, you do work as a service. So, no, that one way he was trying to give up prescribed duties, but then now he is doing devotional service to the Lord in the form of work. Right? He is not giving, at the same time, he is giving up the so called material duties. So, this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam is a continuation of the question you asked, Karima. Like, you know, why prescribed duties sometimes not useful. So, we'll read the translation. Actually, it's a very sweet verse. Tyaktva svadharmam charanambujam harer bhajanna pakuvata pate yato yadi yatrapaba vabhadram abhudhamasyakim ko varta apto abhajatam svadharmata. You can read the translation. If someone
takes to Krishna consciousness, even though he may not follow the prescribed duties in the shastras or execute the devotional service properly, and even though he may fall down from the standard, there is no loss or evil for him.
Mm.
But if he carries out all the injunctions for purification in the shastras, what does it avail him if he is not Krishna conscious? So the purificatory process is necessary for reaching this point of Krishna consciousness.
Mm.
Therefore, sannyasa or any purificatory process is to help reach the ultimate goal of becoming Krishna conscious, without which everything is considered a failure.
Wow, so nice, no? See, when I read the first few lines, no, that shows the glories of devotional service. Even if someone takes to Krishna consciousness, even though he may not follow the prescribed duties in the shastras or execute the devotional service properly, no, even devotional service you are not able to do properly. And even though while doing it, we fall down. You know, some once in a while we drink coffee. or you know, once in a while we are not able to chant properly, or you know, once in a while, you know, we are tempted to eat meat or whatever, right? There is no loss or evil. But at the same time, see the reverse. Even if you do the, you know, prescribed duties perfectly, if we are ultimately not Krishna conscious, what's the use? Basically, we miss the point. Prabhupada always tells, right? Zeros. You know, there are 2 zeros, 3 zeros, 100 zeros. Well, ultimately, it's zero. But you just put Krishna 1 in front of it, then it's all the value. Right? So, that's the whole point about all this. So, the another point here is, the purificatory process is necessary to reach ultimately to Krishna consciousness. So this is, again, it relates to me about this point about, you know, karma, how Krishna protects his devotees. We talked about several times, right? We are supposed to get some reactions from based on our previous actions, right? Maybe, you know, some accident or something, you know, major is supposed to happen in our life. But same thing happens, but, so there is difference between fate and destiny. That's what Prabhu was recollecting from Prabhupada's lecture, Harivilas Prabhu's class. Fate and destiny. Fate is going to always happen. So according to our fate, we are about to meet an accident. So that's going to happen. But destiny may change based on Krishna. Destiny is like what we are going to get out of it. We were supposed to probably break a leg or something out of that accident. But we may just get by a small scratch. Right? So because Krishna intervenes for devotees. Why? Maybe that purification is not needed for us right now. If we are already sincerely following the path of devotion service, we are already following the path of purification, why need to give extra reactions for purification? Reactions are meant for purification. Got it? So that's why Krishna intervenes and stops certain things when they are not needed. So ultimately the goal of purification process is to come to Krishna consciousness. So if you are already Krishna conscious, then there is no need for additional purificative processes or additional reactions to purify us.
So, even though you're falling from the standard, you said, sometimes, once in a while,
yes,
you are still considered to be purified?
Yes, yeah. So that verse in Srimad Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, I think. Where Krishna says that even if you fall down, you should not be considered. I hope I can.
That's okay.
That's okay. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just want to understand.
Yeah.
Just,
okay. So essentially the point is we covered earlier chapter.
The chapter six.
Chapter six, right?
The meditation, the chapter, right? When you fall down, you'll come back.
That's,
and start,
yeah. You'll come back and start. That's
not the one.
That's not the one. Okay. I was. There is specific verse where Krishna says that, you know, You should respect such a soul. You should not consider that person has fallen, even if he has fallen down. So it's in 7th chapter somewhere.
Mataji, in 2nd chapter there is one verse, right? The progress made in, you know, this endeavor.
Yeah, that's what.
Right?
Yeah, 2.40 we covered just now.
Oh,
Swarpam
okay.
Api Asti Dharmasya.
Yeah.
That's also there in 2nd chapter. It's also there in 7th or 9th. So where, you know, while following the path of devotional service, because of there in the purport in that 7th chapter, Prabhupada says that, you know, by nature, material nature is so powerful, one is endeavoring in the path, he may fall down. That's, you know, it may happen. At the same time, it's not considered fallen. Because as long as he is determined in the path of devotion service, that's the cause, that's the clause. It's not that, you know, I keep doing the, you know, fallen activity again and again with an excuse of devotion service. If I'm determined, you know, I'm struggling to do devotion service with all my conditioning, with all my, you know, addictions, then I'm not considered fallen. That's the clause Krishna adds. Basically, the point is we should be sincere.
Sure. Your goal, your aim.
Yes, exactly.
You may fall and fumble on the path.
Yes.
Reaching that.
Yeah. So kid falls down, right, while trying to stand up so much.
Yes.
So still, but
that's
it's not, yeah.
Is
no, not yet. They're trying to crawl now. But I'm hoping someday they'll walk.
Mataji, one question. Here, you're saying purification process like sannyasa. So what are other purification processes? Like,
purificatory process.
What does it mean like? you have to go through with some process.
Yeah, basically the Varnashrama is the gradual material. Based on the Varnashrama Dharma, we get purified, right? Like, you know, we grow from Brahmachari, Grihastha, Sannyasa, Varnaprastha and Sannyasa.
Also,
this is a gradual path of purification.
Also, yeah, all the other prescribed duties, right? Ancestor, you know, ancestor, you know, taking care of ancestors, etc. All of that is purification.
Prescribed duties, right?
If you follow it all.
Yeah, there are five people whom we owe, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What does taking care of ancestors
mean? No, prescribed duties, you have, and I think we covered this, even ancestral, you know, you have obligations.
Obligations. We have obligations to five kinds of people, right? Ancestors.
Right.
I don't know all the five. Yeah, demigods.
1.41.
Oh, yeah, she remembers the verse always. Okay. Anyway, everybody can remember that verse. 1.41.
I know that there is a certain, I don't know, it's not a festival, but there is a particular thing which is commemorated.
Yeah, Shraddha ceremony.
Comes in the form of a crow, right?
Yeah. Yeah, those are also part of prescribed duties. Yeah.
Remembering your ancestors.
Mm.
Right.
What is it, why we are clubbing prescribed duty with the purification, purifactory process?
Because prescribed duties are also meant for purification.
If you do it consciously. But
prescribed duties would be a subset of purificatory process, right? It's a subset, like let's you're saying sannyasa. So sannyasa will have some kind of their own prescribed duty, like
if you want to follow
Varnashram, so it has different kind of duties.
Yes.
So you're saying we have to follow those purificatory process, only then we will be Krishna conscious.
No. So that,
like, why? I mean, whatever we are doing right now, where we are just building a base.
So essentially, it's the same thing, just staircase versus elevator kind of thing. Krishna conscious, it's, or, you know, bhakti yoga itself purifies us. For us, that's the purificatory process we are following. But otherwise, by doing duties gradually, we can elevate ourselves.
Okay, this is a gradual process.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So Prabhupada is telling, when we are ultimately already trying to be Krishna conscious, we don't need to go through this, you know, purificatory process of gradual purification.
But those duties you're saying, the prescribed duties, are towards other people, or does it involve the Lord? Because I think one of the things it mentions is you may
the ultimate goal
is at performing all the duties, but if it's not towards Krishna conscious,
then it's no use. Yes. So ultimate goal of prescribed duties is to please Vishnu or, you know, God. But sometimes we may end up doing duties without that connection. Then we are lost. That's the point we are telling. That's what we have been doing.
But what is the definition of those duties? Are those duties defined around people we serve? Or there are certain duties that are incorporated that are to serve the Lord? How does one come to know about what those prescribed duties are?
Yeah, so right now we discussed earlier, right? So material duties and spiritual duties. So material duties is based on guna and karma. Like most of us in Kali Yuga, it's defined we are Shudras. So, you know, Shudras means we have to serve somebody. So our duty is to serve somebody, then we'll serve somebody. So we can't quit serving somebody like that.
So, but there are, you know, it just says that, right? Based on your guna and karma, right?
Yes.
But what could be the duties of, like, is there somewhere...
Brahmachari?
For everyone, for
Kshatriya or Vaishya. Yeah, yeah, there will be more details. I don't know where, but we can not in Bhagavad Gita, maybe. In Bhagavatam or somewhere, yeah. But Kshatriya is definitely... Oh, actually, Bhagavad Gita only may have it, yeah. Because Krishna talks about modes. Yeah, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, where Krishna talks about what is the qualities of a Kshatriya, what is the activities of Brahmana, Vaishya, Shudra, yeah. 14th or 16th or 17th?
Three modes of
material nature. It talks about modes. Specific thing, yeah. We can refer later and we can tell actually. I don't know exactly where it is. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about that. Okay.
But overall, the Vedas themselves also do the same thing, right? They tell you how to behave and what your duties are.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
But are they segregated according to whether you're a Brahmin or Kshatriya?
In the Vedas?
Maybe in the Vedas, but otherwise if we were in the purificatory process, they are they still divided according to whether you were a Kshatriya or a
Brahmin? Not at least birth, right?
Not a birth definition. Not a birth definition, but I think they would
the temple
right, based on Yogunas.
Nowadays there is we cannot say somebody is a Brahmana Kshatriya. That's why it's a Kalo Shudra Sambhava. It's like everybody is a Shudra. Unless you know we take devotional service, that's when we get purified from mode of ignorance to passion to goodness. That's when you know we have been given, you know, Brahman initiation. We chant Gayatri, we do deity worship. So gradually devotion service elevates us to mode of goodness. Otherwise we are Shudras by birth. Everybody.
Even though we come from that lineage.
Yes. It's not by birth. It's by activities and karma. Activities and guna, qualities. Okay, so we'll go to the next verse, text number 6. Renounce, but he cultivates internally, you know, the desire to enjoy as Mithyachari. Who knows the meaning of Mithyachari without seeing that word to word? We know this term, right?
Eternally sinful, does something opposite of whatever he does, basically.
Pretender,
hypocrite.
So one who restrains, should we close that door, other door? The other door is also open. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. So essentially a person who restrains from activities, but actually his mind is dwelling on the enjoyment, sense objects. See, we are all like that, no? We try to, you know, stop watching TV or, you know, stop doing certain things.
So
but
this is how we make progress, right? Though our senses are anchoring, we have to control them so that eventually we
That's because we are endeavoring for perfection. But this person wants to show himself to be a renounced person. Like a sannyasa, right? Like, you know? Yeah. But we don't tell, at least we try to be sincere. We tell, you know, Prabhu, I'm trying to chant, you know, I'm trying to put my mind on Krishna, but, you know, it's not working out. We don't act like, you know, Hare Krishna, internally, you know, do all this. Everybody will say, oh, I'm a good chanter. At least we don't want to do that. We may cheat ourselves also. Yeah. So Krishna is calling such a person Mithyachara, pretender. So we'll read from four lines of the purport for sense enjoyment. Karima Mata.
There are many pretenders.
No, we can read from four lines. Okay. For sense enjoyment.
For sense enjoyment, one can act in any capacity of the social order. But if one follows the rules and regulations of his particular status, he can make gradual progress in purifying his existence. But he who makes a show of being a yogi while actually searching for the objects of sense gratification must be called the greatest cheater. Even though he sometimes speaks of philosophy, his knowledge has no value because the effects of such a sinful man's knowledge are taken away by the illusionary energy of the Lord. Such a pretender's mind is always impure, and therefore his show of yogic meditation has no value whatsoever.
So if you see carefully in the purport, Prabhupada is defining all the characteristics of such a person, right? We can write points, you know, bullet points. So one is, you know, first of all, no, he is just making a show, right? So he's a pretender. So Prabhupada is calling him the greatest cheater, pretender. Such a person, even though internally, you know, externally he poses himself to be renounced, but internally he is cultivating sense gratification. That's a definition. And the second, third point is, Shobha Mataji, do you want to, Shobha Mataji, do you want to close that door? Second point, first one is definition, right? The person who so-called renounces the actions but internally cultivates the desires for sense gratification. That's a definition. Such a person is called the greatest cheater or pretender. That's the first point. Second point is, his knowledge is actually taken away by illusory energy. So even though he speaks so-called philosophy, there is no effect. The illusory energy takes away his potency. So he may speak big lectures, but it doesn't touch people's hearts. Now sometimes we feel, right, like when we listen to somebody who's sincerely practicing, something touches and we feel inspired, you know, to follow, because they themselves follow properly. So it's our duty to follow properly. So when we reach out to others and we share something with others, we can do better service. Otherwise, what will happen? It just goes from here to there, because it doesn't touch their hearts, because illusory energy takes away the effects.
But Mataji, there are a lot of followers, you know, of those kind of yogis, right?
Yes.
Who later they fell down.
Yes.
But they have big followers recently.
Yes.
Like one
Yogi Baba.
Yeah. Asaram Babu.
Asaram Babu.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were a lot of followers. So how did they get convinced, you know, if there was no potential?
So, no. If you, there's, you know, this world is all about cheaters and the cheated. If we, that's the whole thing, you know, there are one, the Prabhupada says, like, you know, there are many shops. There are diamond shops also, there are also roll gold shops. Many people, you see a lot of people going to roll gold shops. There are very few people who want to go pay the price to buy the diamond. If you tell Krishna consciousness, you first starts with four regulative principles, that's all. You 99% people, okay, namaste sir, you do devotional service, I know, I'll do my thing, right? So that's the thing, but you have to pay the price for the bona fide. If you want to get the goal, Krishna, in pure love for Krishna, this is the price you have to pay. But otherwise people, just for the sake of, you know, mental sanity, they want to follow a certain path just to feel like and feel good. Okay, you know, I'm doing some kind of sadhana, something, you know, it's at least giving me peace. Because any mantra you keep chanting sometime, maybe, you know, mind, you know, by saying certain thing again and again, some peace you will get. So I'm getting some peace, I'm fine. This life, I'm fine. I don't care about future lives. And sometimes, you know, I may even get money or, you know, gold or something, right? So I'm happy with that. And some yogis, they have mystic powers also because of some... The thing is, any austerity you do, you'll get mystic powers. That's by design of action of karma, you'll get it. It's not that, you know, Krishna will stop certain people to get certain powers so that they will cheat others. It's by design of karma, they will get it. So if they get mystic powers, they can influence others.
I think there is nothing wrong. If someone is really looking for that mystic power, then he's going to that power, then that's fine. Right?
Yeah.
Because he's satisfying his sense,
yes,
like I need something that he has.
Yeah.
Like,
so the Prabhu's question is, why is, you know, Krishna allowing certain people to be cheated? You know, so many people are at loss, right, because of one person. So because they themselves are not sincere. If they're sincere, automatically we'll get guided. So Krishna guides
the disciples.
Yeah, exactly. So they also want to be, you know, want to be in some mixed path. You know, want to show that, you know, I'm sort of following certain thing or whatever internally. They are not pure, or they are not ready, you know, to accept Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are not surrendered enough, you know, so many things. Many of us...
may not be mature enough too. May not be mature enough.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to... What if they were only exposed to that? They didn't know anything.
That's right. So those people, eventually, you know, when they're open-minded, when they're sincere, when they're pure enough, they will somehow or the other, they come to the right thing. It's not that. That's why, you know, it's our duty now. You know, when we get something right, you know, when we feel this is right, you know, to share with others as much as possible. No? Because so many people, as Prabhu is saying, are lost. Because they don't even know.
So some people, they just like
just
ask for, they want material things, and
yes,
then they, these people, sannyasis, can provide like magic and
yes,
them something.
They're happy.
Or help them get some material stuff.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So I think one of the distinctions that can be very easily made is someone who is just trying to make you progress in spirituality, then maybe, you know, that could be the right
yes
thing, and then there could be, you know,
yes,
some debate over
yeah
that. But there's definitely one
yes
distinction
yes
that, you know, I can
even see. Material things we can ask
Krishna,
right?
Yeah, yeah, but like some, like they through some magic they show you, you will get married, or you know, something like
yeah
that, you know. So those
but
are
if
definitely
you're getting instant coffee and
yeah
processed coffee
yeah
the time, right? So who wants to do that to put like all
okay
the
so the third
like
point
whatever
is so the third point there is such a pretender's mind is always impure, right? Illusory energy takes away effects of his knowledge, and the third point is his mind is impure. That means he himself will not get purification by doing such a so-called renunciation. Okay, so certain points of such a person. So we don't want to follow, or we don't want to be such a person. To act as if we are renounced, but internally cultivate sense of gratification. But rather what we should do. That's what Krishna is going to tell next. Krishna is glorifying a certain person who is not a pretender, but a sincere person. So we want to follow that path, which is second next verse 7.
What was the third point you said?
Third point is his mind is impure.
Impure.
Impure. Basically, it's just bulleting the points from the purport we read just now. That's all. On the other hand, the sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. So what which is a better path? Sincere person, basically wherever he is situated, he remains there and he tries to actively control the senses by engaging in Krishna consciousness, he is better. Instead of just acting as if I am renounced, but internally cultivating sense gratification, I know where I am, gradually take up devotional service and gradually purify myself from this temptations, then I am much more, you know, superior. I forgot to mention one example in the last class, the last verse. There are two brahmacharis who are, you know, they are going on the path for some, you know, some whatever they do. And then they are trying to attempt to cross the river. Then they find one old lady who was trying to cross and she was not able to cross the river. Yeah.
Young lady, right?
You know the example you want to share? Share, you can share.
I can't.
Okay. So she wants to cross, young lady, and she wants to cross. Then one person said, oh, I'm a brahmachari, I can't even, you know, see, I can't even touch women, you know, I can't even, you know, I don't even want to do anything. The other person said, okay, I'm going to, you know, serve you, I'm going to help you, and he carried her over here, and somehow they crossed. After they crossed, after a long time they passed, the other person, you know, he said, no, I don't want to do, he was saying, you know, how can that young lady, how can you carry her, you know, it's not good for us, you know, our dharma, you should not even touch, you should not even see, what are you doing? Then he said, I dropped her there itself, you're still carrying her here, even now you're carrying her. So that's the point, right, you know, he did as a service. In the nature of duty. But this person is trying, you know, he's still contemplating on the woman's beauty.
They were both brahmacharis.
Yeah.
And one of them denied
him. Yeah. So that's the very nice example I thought we can discuss. Okay. So for this seventh verse, purport, we'll read like last six lines for self-realization. Who's Shobha Mataji? For self-realization, one can live.
For self-realization, one can live a controlled life as prescribed in the Shastras and continue carrying out his business without attachment, and in that way make progress. A sincere person who follows this method is far better situated than a false pretender who adopts showboating spiritualism to cheat the innocent public. A sincere sweeper in the street is far better than a
charlatan meditator
who meditates only for the sake of making
enemy. So here Krishna is telling a sincere grihastha is far better than an mithyachari sannyasi. No, be a grihastha, okay. No, I have some gratification from opposite sex. Okay, I'm married, I'll have kids, everything. But in that context, I'm trying to do devotional service. I'm honestly accepting, you know, my desires, and I'm trying to gradually purify them. And compared to somebody, you know, who wants to make a show that, you know, I'm renounced, I don't have any attraction to opposite sex, but internally cultivate and, you know, cause a social disturbance. Okay, so we want to be this person who wants to be sincere, because that's what Krishna says, he's superior. Okay, we'll go to the next verse, text number 8. Prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, your prescribed duty as a kshatriya, as a grihastha, is to fight. So you do that rather than not doing it. Even to maintain one's physical body, one has to work. So we'll read from third line. For Lord Krishna did not want Arjuna. Mataji.
Lord Krishna did not want Arjuna to become a pretender. Rather, the Lord desired that Arjuna perform his prescribed duties as set forth for Kshatriyas. Arjuna was a householder and a military general, and therefore it was better for him to remain as such and perform his religious duties as prescribed for the householder Kshatriya. Such activities gradually cleans the heart of a mundane man and free him from material contamination.
Okay, we can pause there. So basically Krishna is saying, Arjuna, you are a kshatriya and you are a householder. So according to that, there are certain duties which are, you have to fight, you know, fight in the war, and you have to maintain your family. So you just do that, because that duties are going to purify your heart. So basically here Krishna is addressing it a platform of duty itself, you know. Eventually he will say, you know, do it because I am saying you to do. Which is devotional service. So we'll read next few lines. Work should not be given up capriciously.
Work should not be given up capriciously without purification of materialistic propensities. Anyone who is in the material world is certainly possessed of the impure propensity for lording it over material nature, or in other words, for sense gratification. Such polluted propensities have to be cleared. Without doing so, through prescribed duties, one should never attempt to become a so-called transcendentalist, renouncing work and living at the cost of others.
So we should not give up work whimsically, that's what Prabhupada is saying. So it should be done under guidance. Capriciously means whimsically. And also without purification we cannot do. So right now, for example, we all have to, especially in this world, right? Now women also, they work and all this. But actually, you know, olden days, women stayed home, took care of children. But now the need is of the hour, everybody has to work. So, but then while doing that work, how we can purify ourselves, right? So somehow or the other, we know, we have to know how to do that work as service to Krishna, Vishnu, Krishna. So do that work as a devotional service to Krishna. Then that work will purify us. So that's what Krishna is going to tell in the last final verse in this section. How that work should be done in such a way that it doesn't cause bondage. You know, what is the nature of the work? Everybody has to work. So finally, in all these verses, Krishna told, finally, because by nature of the soul, we have to, we are active, we have to work. Or, you know, by nature, you know, we can't even maintain our body without work. So we have to work, right? So all these things Krishna covered. And because we have to do our prescribed duties. Now Krishna is telling how such a work should be done in such a way that it doesn't cause bondage. So Arjuna's fear was, if I do action, I'm going to get reaction. So I'm not going to do action.
So
but Krishna is telling how you can do that action at the same time don't get reaction, which is by doing that action for satisfaction of Vishnu, right? So that's what Krishna is concluding in the 9th verse. Yagna, we'll read the Yagna arthat karmano anyatra loko yam karma bandana tadhartam karma kaudeya mukta sangha samachara. Yajnātāt karmano yatra lokoyam karma bandhana tadartham karma kaundeya mukta sangha samāchara. This is one of the memorizing verses, so I know that, that's why. Okay. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. So this is what Karma Yoga is. Karma Yoga is do your work for satisfaction of Vishnu. Otherwise, what will happen? It causes bondage. Right? So that's what, you know, we have been learning. So Krishna is giving it in a verse, the whole conclusion. So we'll read the second paragraph.
Therefore, one has to work for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Any other work done in this material world will be a cause of bondage. For both good and evil work have their reactions, and any reaction binds the performer. Therefore, one has to work in Krishna consciousness to satisfy Krishna or Vishnu. And while performing such activities, one is in
liberated state. So such activities becomes akarma, right? Because we are doing a devotional service, then we don't get reactions. So it becomes akarma, and while doing akarma, we are already considered to be in liberated stage.
This is the great art of doing work. And in the beginning, this process requires very expert
guidance. So that's the key. So we cannot do whimsically.
One should therefore act very
diligently
under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna, or under the direct instructions of Lord Krishna himself, under whom Arjuna has the opportunity to work. Nothing should be performed for sense gratification, but everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. This practice will not only save one from the reaction of work, but also gradually elevate one to transcendental loving service of the Lord, which alone can raise one to the kingdom of God.
So Arjuna's question was, you know, I don't want to get reactions, right? So the answer is, you know, by doing devotional service, not only that we are safe from reactions, but also we are gradually progressing towards the purification also, and we are also gradually progressing towards transcendental loving service of the Lord. Our goal, no, love for Krishna. So purification is just a side benefit actually, right? And also stopping from reactions also side benefit. But our goal is ultimately, you know, yeah, Goloka Vrindavan, love for Krishna. Otherwise we may get stuck with those things and stay there. So, you know, I was listening to one lecture, so Prabhu was talking about, you know, pleasure, right? We all are seeking for pleasure. So one way is, that's what we have been doing, you know, try to satisfy our own senses, right? Trying to satisfy our own senses. But eventually we'll end up with misery. Because flip side of the coin, right?
Misery and
sadness. So they both come together. It's just around the corner, they say. But whereas, if you strive to satisfy Krishna's senses, automatically we will be satisfied. So that's why Prabhu was telling, actually devotees are most intelligent. No, he was telling, you know, they are not, as you were saying, always, you know, abstinence, you know, what do you get in abstinence? So, devotees are most intelligent that, you know, they know how to get the real pleasure, you know. What, it may seem like we are sacrificing so many things, but they are, how can so many sages, so many saintly people of so many, you know, days of so many ages have given up these worldly things without getting anything? How could they do that? That means they are getting something far superior.
Higher taste.
Higher taste. Yeah. So that's what, that's where we can get the real pleasure in serving the Lord. So, we conclude our section. So, one advantage with this is that, you know, we'll cover one theme. Like, you know, we can walk home with a theme. Right? Otherwise, we always, like, you know, do one, two verses. You don't know overall what's happening. Mm-hmm. That's also one positive, negative way.
But
Mataji,
as well as
yeah.
Even though we were going verse by verse, I think our group is the fastest one, right? Isn't it?
We were going pretty fast. Actually, yeah. I was feeling, I thought of actually trying to send out a survey or something, which we feel better. My feeling was that we were doing very nicely.
Mm.
I like verse by verse, and that way we are slow, but we are steady.
Okay. Yeah, whichever, we'll see. Anyway, I don't think once Prabhu starts doing, I don't think he'll be able to do many verses.
Okay.
So we'll see how, you know, and some sections are very, you know, long. So we'll not be able to do anyway.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll strike a balance, like, you know.
Okay, we'll stop here. Hare Krishna.